It's 2006. Will Sony make the first big story of the year? Plus, a warning about changing your gamer tag. Also, you won't believe who is rallying against an upcoming game. All that in your live calls and chat comments on the Bobby Blackwolf Show, week of January 1st, 2006. Bobby Blackwolf Show, you're on the air.
Calling in to chime in about this, Matt. And
it's your fault, Doc Wolf. It's you guys who buy these dumb Katamari, that game.
Bobby Blackwolf back at Dragon Con 2005. I am here at Anime Weekend Atlanta 11. I'm here at the Best Buy in Alpharetta, Georgia, talking about the Xbox 360 launch.
DC Nate and everybody in chat's all going, we didn't buy into the hype. You did buy into the hype, you just didn't buy the system.
From a little room in Atlanta, Georgia, it's Bobby Blackwolf.
Yes, it's me. Happy New Year. It's 2006. It's a new start. It's the AllGames.com experience. I am Bobby Blackwolf, and you are listening to the first episode of the Bobby Blackwolf Show in 2006. How are you guys doing? Brand new intro music. I wrote it this week using old NES sounds. There's a new stuff at the end of the show, too. This is the Bobby Blackwolf Show, where we discuss the current news affecting the video game industry, as well as reminisce about gaming's history. We are in the AllGames.com chat room on the GameSurge IRC network, if you're listening to us live. Our Skype line is Bobby Blackwolf Show. That is all one word. Or if you're listening to the podcast, you can call that Skype line and leave a voicemail. Or you can send me an email at blackwolf@allgames.com. Before the show, we had Kropotkin with his UK, it's not really a news segment, it was more of a very quick look back, kind of a recap of really what he felt was 2005, but he does a UK news segment. It runs just before this show goes live. It's about 10 minutes long, and we play it before the show. You can get it as a podcast at kropotkin.co.uk. You can also find that link and many others that we talk about here on our website, allgames.com/podcast. So it's a new year, and one of the things that I wanted to point out that was very interesting to me was it's a personal experience. Went to a New Year's party that a friend of mine that I've actually known since elementary school has been throwing a New Year's party at his house for the past, you know, 5, 6, 7 years. And we've always been going there, and one of the things that everybody did was they sat around, and I didn't do this because I'm not that great at shooter games, but they loved to play Time Splitters 2. Or they some other shoot 'em up game. You know, recently it's been Battlefront. But last night I got an email right before I was about to leave saying, "Hey Bobby, we think you might have this game called Guitar Hero. Can you bring your guitar if you have it?" Apparently one of them bought Guitar Hero recently, and I don't talk to them all that much about rhythm games because I play them all the time, but they're more into the, you know, run and shoot people and all that stuff. And people were playing Guitar Hero at this party all frickin' night. They had to go find another PS2 to go play, like, a couple rounds of Time Splitters. So it was very interesting to see that, you know, people will enjoy Guitar Hero. So if you're into music at all and you have a PlayStation 2, it's $70, which is a lot more than a game, but you get the controller and the game. Pick up Guitar Hero. So we're in the chat room right now. A lot of people are happy about hearing the new music. Soul Brother Rule also says that Dance Dance Revolution is $60 with the mat, but Dance Dance Revolution forces you to use your legs. Guitar Hero is actually about playing an instrument. There's not that much news to cover this week. We are actually going to be replaying the most downloaded segment from the Bobby Blackwolf Show in 2005. We'll be playing that in the middle. But the news is going to start this coming weekend, and I won't be there. But at the Consumer Electronics Show in Las Vegas, Sony is reportedly going to be showing off the PlayStation 3. They've apparently gotten a lot of floor space in Las Vegas, and they're apparently going to be showing the PS3. Is it going to be in playable form? I don't know. Is it going to be the actual unit, or are they going to be dev kits? I don't know. I'm going to be very interested to hear, and I think Scott Rubin, who hosts All Games Interactive, also on this Shoutcast stream, he's going, and so he will have his opinions of the PS3, and if he thinks that Madden on the PS3 is actually going to be worth it. He'll have that this coming weekend. We'll look through the news and talk about it a little bit this weekend. I wish I could be out there, but things don't work out financially for me on this. I have opened up our Skype line, Bobby Blackwolf Show, if you want to talk about the PS3. But one thing I wanted to bring about, and I actually wanted him to call in, and unfortunately, because it's New Year's night, people have plans. Hendrix, who is a, I'll admit, he's a good friend of mine, but he's a longtime listener of the show, member of the All Games community. He recently had an issue with Xbox Live. Now, he got an Xbox 360, finally, and, hey, he had a gamer tag that had G4 in it, because the first time he kind of was with the community was with when G4. And he was a fan of G4 back when it was actually something worth being a fan of. And he noticed, and actually I pointed it out to him, that for 800 Microsoft points, which is about $10, you can change your gamertag. And so he was able to remove the cancer from his gamertag. Unfortunately, he then went to his original Xbox, and he tried to play a game online. Well, his gamertag didn't exist anymore. And he tried to recover his new gamertag, and it wouldn't let him. It says gamertag not found. So what he said, he wrote a post on our forums. Quote, after calling Xbox support, I got to talk with a guy who, A, sounds like he's talking into a coffee can because they're messing with their phone system, and B, tries to tell me that a migrated Xbox Live account just won't work on the original Xbox anyway. Which is not true, because mine works just fine, but then again, I haven't changed my name. So the Xbox Live tech support people actually gave him a solution. The solution to his dilemma here is to buy a second Xbox Live account for his original Xbox. They will not let you migrate your, change your gamer tag on Xbox 360 and use it on your original Xbox. You have to buy a new gamer tag. There is no warning on the screen where you change your gamer tag. There's no warning at all that says that you will not be able to use this on your original Xbox. And he said that, you know, if he saw that warning, he wouldn't have done it. And he would have just, you know, waited until he didn't need his original Xbox anymore before he changed his gamer tags. So he wrote to Microsoft support after going through tech support on the phone twice. He said, quote, your phone support people have told me that I need to get a new Xbox Live account for my original Xbox now that my gamer tag has changed. I don't think that this is acceptable. One of the selling points of Xbox Live Gold membership, which I have, is being able to use that same account on the old Xbox as well. I really feel like I'm getting screwed here since there was no warning that this would happen when I changed my gamertag. I'd appreciate it if you could either change my gamertag back so I can use my old Xbox or find a solution other than buy a new account for it, unquote. And so this was the official response from Microsoft that he forwarded to me. He got it last night. He forwarded this to me, quote, we do apologize for any inconvenience that you may have. Unfortunately, we cannot change the gamer tag that you created when you set up your Xbox Live account. To maintain the community on Xbox Live, gamers must maintain a permanent and unique identity on the Xbox Live service. This is one of the key features of Xbox Live that sets it apart from other online gaming services. So, the response to him, Hendrix changed his gamer tag and now wants to change it back to what it originally was. They said they cannot change a gamer tag from what you've originally said it. So basically, he got a form letter, and they didn't even read. They saw change in gamer tag in the same sentence, and boom, just sent back this response. I'm looking into it. I've put in some emails, and I think even Scott Rubin, who has already had one run-in with Xbox Live customer support on the air, is going to be looking into it, too. So we will keep on this. Hendrix, when you're listening to the podcast, I know you're not here live, but we'll look into this and see if we can't get you playing your normal Xbox on Xbox Live without having to buy another $50 account. Soul Brother Rule wants me to call Don, who is the Xbox Live support person that Scott Rubin called. DC Nate says, didn't he try to recover it again? Apparently, if you create a gamer tag on your Xbox 360, you cannot get it on your Xbox. So here's what you need to do. If you're going to create a gamer tag, let's say you have an Xbox, and you're going to create an Xbox Live account. You have an Xbox, you bought an Xbox 360, and now decided I'm going to finally get on Live. You should create it on your Xbox. You should get Xbox Live, which is the same price, get it on your Xbox, and then recover it on your Xbox 360. That's what you should do. Because if you create it on your Xbox 360, apparently you can't get it on your Xbox. Apparently, even though I haven't changed my gamer tag, I bet if I got another Xbox and tried to put my gamer tag on it, it wouldn't let me. Like, say my hard drive died in my current Xbox and I bought another Xbox to replace it. Maybe this is how they expect to get 1 billion gamers on Live. At this point, they only need to get 500 million gamers that want to have both an Xbox and Xbox 360 Live account, and they'll have their 1 billion live gamers. So Kropotkin agrees. Kropotkin, our UK news guy, says, don't create it on the 360. It's a one-way process. We may be actually creating a second Xbox Live account here for my girlfriend, and we may need it on both the Xbox and the 360. So we'll have to do it that way. I was going to create it on the 360. Since she already has a profile, we just don't have it on Live. So speaking of the Xbox 360 and some things you can do with it, apparently some people have already hacked it. Max Console has reported that the first break in hacking the Xbox 360 has come about. As you remember, Xbox 360 retail kiosks started arriving at retailers, but due to the nature of the distribution process, not all kiosks were hitting simultaneously, and they are continuing to pop up in retailers across the country in the coming weeks. They're designed for a retail environment and feature game samples, game trailers, and product information. Now, Team Pi says that it seems Microsoft was in such a hurry to get this stuff out that they forgot to set the media protection on the disk. This leaves hackers with the possibility to hack around with the disk that load from a normal DVD-R5 backup. Team Pi also notes that all the data files on this disk isn't signed in any way and will allow for extensive modification for producing exploits to further our effort to hack this box. Yes, you can run it, burn the ISO, put it on your Xbox and be very amazed. Think of the possibilities of hacking this little demo disc and that they might start running code on retail Xbox 360s. That was from the info file. I would not run it myself because you never know if Microsoft's just going to say, oh, they loaded that retail demo disc. They must have downloaded it and burned it. Delete account. So I would not run it. I was tempted to actually go and get the ISO and see if it was actually correct, but I didn't want to endanger losing my Xbox Live account because they do know what you're doing, and I'm sure even if you turn off the privacy settings, they still know what you're doing, even if other people on your friends list don't. Soul Brother Rule thought I was going to mention smashmyxbox.com. That was so November. That Smash My Xbox was just so November. DC Nate says, think of how your Xbox will tell on you. Black Wolf is playing illegal Xbox ISO. But if you don't like playing Xbox in your house, why not in your car? Nissan and Microsoft think you really want to play Project Gotham 3 in your car. The Register reports that Nissan and Microsoft have partnered to show that they can deliver as much impotent grandeur as any other auto and software maker duo. The vendors this week announced that they will unveil the first fully integrated gaming system within a vehicle. Okay, yeah, we've all seen PlayStation packed Escalades and stuff, but conceived by Nissan Design America and equipped with the Xbox 360 next-generation video game and entertainment system from Microsoft, the Nissan Urge concept car allows drivers, while parked, to play Project Gotham Racing 3 using the car's own steering wheel, gas pedal, and brake pedal while viewing the game on a flip-down 7-inch LCD screen. The Urge concept car is equipped with the award-winning PGR3, which allows drivers to control a breathtaking trip through the streets of 5 photorealistic locations, New York City, London, Las Vegas, Tokyo, and the I'm not even going to try to pronounce the German track that begins with N, the test track in Germany. PGR3 drivers view and play the game on a flip-down LCD screen, which doubles as a rear-view mirror when the car is being used for real driving. They control the action using the Nissan Urge's race-inspired steering wheel, gas pedal, and brake pedal. A Nissan Urge driver can, for example, maneuver through the streets of New York, park the car, and fire up the Xbox 360, then virtually race through the same streets using the same steering wheel, gas pedal, and brake pedal, blurring fantasy and reality in a way that the automotive world has never before seen. The Urge car with Microsoft on board will be displayed for the first time in January 9th at the 2006 North American International Auto Show in Detroit. So what if somebody who can't really separate fantasy and reality all that well forgets if they're playing the game or driving? I can see this being stopped pretty darn quickly. Shady45 says that the screen should be the front windshield. That would own. I guess that would actually really screw with people's heads. Shady45 also says that one bump on the road and the disc will be ruined, but you have to be parked for it to for the game system to even be on, according to this. And anyway, one of the last things I want to talk about on the Xbox 360 side is a game that finally came out. Never had a set release date, even though everybody believed it had a set release date, other than Holidays 2005, Dead or Alive 4. Tecmo kind of just said Holidays, and the retailer said, oh, it'll be a launch title. Oh, no, it's coming out a week after launch. And every time, like, the game wouldn't come out, they just pushed the launch date, like, a week later. And so everybody got pissed off at Tecmo because GameStop and EB Games had to have a release date in the system so you'd pre-order it. Well, it finally came out, and it was the 30th, I think, is when it finally hit stores. It's a fun little fighter. It's nothing, it's not that much better than DOA 3. It's really, just more jiggling boobies and more characters, and you get to play as a female booby Master Chief with very corny lines, but at least they're in English. But it is fun on Xbox Live. Now, I will say this, if you haven't gotten it yet, don't feel bad. They just reset all the scores today. Apparently there was a bug or something. A lot of people were achieving rank SS online without actually getting there the real way. They were cheating to get up, so they reset everybody's scores. So even though I really only stayed right at the C level, which is where you start, it wiped away all my wins and stuff. So everybody started on equal footing, I think, today. And I checked my Xbox, and yes, all my records are gone and everything. The Versus log is still there, and all the things that I bought for my avatar, which is a neat idea. You just don't spend enough time in that lobby to really appreciate it, except to actually watch all the little cute fuzzy animals clapping and hopping around and stuff. It's pretty cute. It's fun to play around with. And it does have a TV in the lobbies, and it's, looks like it really is streaming 10 frames a second on a postage stamp size. That's how the TV works, but it does work there. So it's kind of interesting. So, I mean, if you like fighting games and you have a 360, this is pretty much your only bet. But it's not that much different than Dead or Alive 3, in my opinion. But it's still fun, and I enjoy it. And I'm not horrible at it, but I'm not all that great at it either. So I'm an easy win for anybody out there. The Matrix says, high-def boobies for the win. But Velocity Girl is not a character in the game. I am sorry, The Matrix. Right now, what we're going to do, like I said, it is a slow news week. The most popular segment that has was downloaded from the Bobby Blackwell Show all year. I do have stats to kind of keep track how much has been downloaded. It was our September 18th show, and this was right after Dragon Con 2005. And this was an interview I did with Mike and Mac Chapman and Jonathan Howe from Homestar Runner discussing the Flash-based video games on their website. They did at the time, they were just finishing up Stinko Man, which is a Mega Man clone. But they have a whole bunch on their site. We talk about that. It's been transcribed. If you go to, I think it's hrwiki.org, you can actually find a transcription with all of our uhs and ums intact from the original broadcast. And that's probably where most people came in and downloaded. But this is the most popular segment. This is on the Bobby Blackwolf Show, looking back at 2005. This was recorded at Dragon Con in September of 2005. Bobby Blackwolf Show, All Games Radio Online.
Bobby Blackwolf here with the Bobby Blackwolf Show. We're still at Dragon Con 2005, and I actually got the chance. I am here with the minds behind Homestar Runner, the Brothers Chaps. How are you guys enjoying Dragon Con so far?
It's been awesome. It's been very interesting.
I'm having a good time as well.
Is this your first time at Dragon Con, or have you been to other Trogdor Cons or whatever?
This is our first, we've lived in Atlanta all our lives pretty much, but this is our first Dragon Con. It's not too different from the times we've gone to visit colleges, just more costumes, obviously.
Wanted to really just focus on the video games that are on the site. All of them are programmed in Flash, and they all had kind of a classic feel to it. What's your big inspiration for making the games?
Regular Nintendo and below, obviously, in terms of the technology. Huge 2600 fans. We've got at our office, we've got like an Intellivision and a ColecoVision and a 2600 and NES and Super NES and all that stuff. We're supposedly getting a Vectrex from some guy soon, which is awesome. But so that's definitely for us was sort of the golden age of gaming. We've got Xboxes and GameCubes now, but we find ourselves more and more playing old emulated games from that era.
One of the questions I want to ask, another Flash gaming site, Newgrounds, they recently were able to have success on the current-gen market with Alien Hominid. Are you guys interested in possibly doing something on the current-gen consoles based on your Flash games?
I don't know. It seems like It just seems like it wouldn't really be making good use of all that hardware. We were just thinking that, the fact that we've got a guy that we've been trying to get to make us a 2600 game is sort of more along the lines of what we'd want to do.
Yeah, most of the games we want to make wouldn't take advantage of the technology that would be available anyway, so if we can put them on our site, we'll just do them there, and if we have an idea for something that, you know, requires more power, we'll maybe do that.
I actually did want to touch on that. Paul Slocum, who's a wonderful homebrew programmer, he's been working on a Homestar Runner RPG, Atari 2600 game. I played both of the ROMs of the demos. And when is it coming out? Do you guys know? I thought it was supposed to come out last year or the year before.
Yeah, I think it's sort of in limbo. I mean, he's talking that... I think it was really pushing the limits of what the 2600 could do, especially with an RPG, and so I think he was getting a little overwhelmed. He realized that all the work he had done, which was, you know, hours and hours and hours, amounted to like 2% of what the game would finally be, and so he kind of freaked out. So he's on hold on that for a while, but he did say that he's willing to look at some other 2600 projects that are a little more, you know, within the normal 2600 realm, not necessarily trying to... I think that's going to be his opus, and so the Homestar Runner was sort of just being applied to it. He could make an RPG that didn't really have to be Homestar Runner or not. So I hope he makes it someday, because I would love to play an RPG on the 2600 for sure.
One of the other RPGs, I was a big Sierra Adventure fan, and so Peasant's Quest...
Right.
How long did it take you to design and come up with all the different things to do in that?
We started that in, February of last year, I think, writing of 2004, and then I think it came out in August. So what's that, like 6-7 months from inception to having it done? And most of the time our game programmer was living in Boston, so it was kind of a long-distance thing, because we would just do a lot of the writing and all the graphics and stuff, and he would do all the programming. So if he was in the same place as us, it may have been a little bit less, but still several months.
Now, the current game going on your site, the Stinkoman 20XD6 game, that's continually having new levels updated to it, or what's the deal with that? Because I keep seeing, like, level 9 just added.
Right.
So it's...
Yeah, the original idea was that we, because Jonathan, our programmer, made this editor, this really slick editor, where we can make our own levels, and the point was supposed to be that this is a game that he didn't always need to be involved with, that just Mike and I would sit there and be able to make our own levels, but then as we went, we just end up making each level bigger and you know, more of a big deal and have...
Each level is essentially its own game,
right?
Because they have different mechanics and stuff.
So this will go. We just decided after we got to like level 5 or 6 that we'd just go to 10 and then stop, and then that'll be the end of the game, and we'll move on to another project. So we put up 9 today, and so 10 will probably be, you know, within the next month or so, and then you know, whatever the next big project we want to focus on.
And I am happy to report that it seems just as hard as the original Mega Man.
Nice, that's good to hear. That's what we always want to the frustrating factor to be
playing about Peasant's Quest, and it's like, well, we got to keep it frustrating. You know, if you type get rocks, no, you got to type get pebbles.
Yeah. That's the nature of those games. That's the whole point. So it was nice to hear that we nailed that in terms of how much a pain in the ass they are to play.
And everybody in our chat room, we still discussed, you know, where the obvious exits are, North, South, and Dennis. So it's safe to say that Homestar Runner really has had an impact on a lot of the internet communities, probably that you guys don't even know about, you know, just closet fans. So. Are you able to talk about any future Flash games on your site that's not up there yet, or?
We want to do another Peasant's Quest type game. We've thought about maybe going the LucasArts route, with the early like point and click where you've got all your commands at the bottom, or the you know, later Sierra point and click interface. But definitely, you know, it'll stay fairly old school. It's funny because the closer you get into that age of like Super VGA and VGA, the harder it gets to sort of emulate that.
Right.
When you get out of low res, it's still like it's bad graphics, but it's harder to create bad graphics. So, but yeah, we want to like something else big for sure. There may be a couple of other smaller, the Vitelectrics, more arcadey, like Atari 2600 type games in the meantime. But yeah, we'll I don't know, maybe some Cheat Commandos game of some kind we've talked about, or a Peasant's Quest type game that's like the Homestar characters, as opposed to being, you know, in the Trogdor universe. It would just be like you'd be Homestar or Strongbad walking around saying get pebbles instead of get rocks.
Well, thank you for taking the time out to talk to the Bobby Blackwolf Show. I'll try, if I ever see Paul Slocum, I'll get on him to see the game, because I have an Atari 2600. It works,
right.
And I buy the game
exactly.
From Atari Age. You know, I'm on Atari Age, and I'm friends with them. So, thank you for taking the time out.
Yeah, thanks so much for talking to us.
Thanks, Black Wolf.
2066.
Black Wolf here with the Bobby Black Wolf Show, continuing at Dragon Con 2005 and continuing about Homestar Runner. I am with Jonathan Howe, who is the programmer of all the recent Flash games, probably since 2001. How you doing? How you enjoying Dragon Con?
I'm having fun. It's nice to see you, Bobby.
He's gritting his teeth.
I mean. No, that's not true. Come on. I am having fun. I've never been to a con like this before, so it's been fun.
You've worked on pretty much all the Flash games, pretty much, that people play nowadays, like the Peasant's Quest and Trogdor.
Since Trogdor came out, what happened is that they were a little smaller back then, and I emailed them, and I said, you know, I make games, and I'll do it for free. I just want to work with you guys, and I can make a little more advanced games. And they were, like, intrigued by that, so we started working together. And then now I moved down here, and I've been working with them on bigger games like the Stinko Man game and the Peasant's Quest game have been our big projects.
What have been the pitfalls with doing Flash game development? What have been some of the challenges that people maybe don't see because it looks like the games are so simplistic with all the graphics? What are some of the more complicated things you've run into making them?
Well, it's interesting because you got Flash, which is, you know, now like, you know, they got a C++ type language and stuff. It's very advanced, and then you're trying to make these older games with it. So, like, it's almost like trying to kill an ant with a bazooka. But the bazooka can be unwieldy and hard to hold. So, and we actually have performance problems, which is sort of ironic, especially in Stinko Man, like lots of scrolling and stuff because Flash is trying to render all these like tiny shapes and stuff. So, and also you mentioned earlier when we were talking about the save games, it was a little trickier than it might have been normally to make save games for Peasant's Quest or something like that. But mostly it was just every project that we start turns out to be bigger than we thought it would be. So Peasant's Quest, we know we knew it was going to be a big project, but we probably estimated it would be a quarter of what it actually took us. So, I mean, we work on it 6 months. And then I came here in January. We started working on Stinko Man. And we just finished level 9. We put it up today, and we're trying to pull out a finale. So, you know, it'll be 10 months probably that it took to do the project from start to finish.
So you moved down here?
Yeah, I was living up in Massachusetts, and I went freelance, and I decided to come down here to be closer to the scene with Homestar. So it's been a lot of fun.
And I will be happy to report that Stinko Man is as hard as the original Mega Man games. I told them their interview earlier, so congratulations on that.
Yeah, thanks. I don't know whether that's something to be proud of. Certainly a lot of people have been coming by the booth and trying it out. We have it set up on a gamepad, and it's upsetting some people. So I think we got it right, right?
Is the collaboration, is it both, do you work with the brothers Chaps, or do they kind of design it out, art it out, and then tell you kind of what they want, or how does that work?
We sort of talk about what we want to do next, like what cliche we want to sort of shatter or whatever. They'll maybe give me some starting graphics, and then I'll go and plug them in, and we'll try it out and see what's missing and see what we need to add. So we sort of, like, swap back and forth, and they do most of the graphics and the cutscenes, and then I make the cutscenes work, and I do all the music. I actually use GarageBand to make all the music, which is also another bazooka ant kind of situation, because I limit myself to using three voices in the percussion because that's the way the Nintendo was.
Yeah.
So I'm using this like wonderful like program that I really like working with, and I'm only doing three voices. So that's fun. So you know, we started just like talk about the story together, but they do the cutscenes and stuff, and then they make the levels usually. I made some of them, but it depends on who's free when the time comes time. And then Ryan playtests them for us.
Are you able to reveal, like, what? Any idea where you guys are probably going to go next? Which genre you're going to go after next?
We have been talking about we kind of want to do a Peasant's Quest sequel because we just had so much fun doing it, but it's a lot of work. I have been sort of whipping up a Duck Guardian sequel, although it wasn't very popular. We were very fond of the design behind that, and we want to keep going with that. And then I know we've been talking about we want to do something with the Cheap Commandos because they just would translate really well. So I can't say more what that would be, but we're just really trying to put Stinko Man game to bed. That's my major focus right now.
Thank you very much for spending some time with us. Enjoy the rest of the con.
Hey, no problem. Thanks.
It's over!
This is Crystal 1724, welcoming you back to the Bobby Blackwell Show, the only place that consistently and effectively owns me every time I call in.
Thank you very much, Chrisville 1724. You can leave a bumper just like that. We'd like to have some new ones, because I've played most of the ones we've had, like, three or four or five or six times, by calling our Skype line during the week, Bobby Blackwell Show. Leave your name and your hometown. Doesn't have to be your real name. And say, you know, welcome back to the Bobby Blackwell Show. So, ironically, chat's been very, very silent during that interview. Either they loved it that much, or they were tired of hearing it. Anyway, like I said, there's slow news week, but we do have some other things to talk about. A press release issued by Infinium Labs, this is kind of funny, states that they will be launching the Phantom Lap Board in the second quarter of 2006. Now, the Lap Board is a bespoke wireless keyboard, this is from their press release, keyboard and mouse designed specifically for PC gamers. Amongst the features it boasts are a 360-degree rotating keyboard for either left- or right-handed players. Under the keyboard is the lap board for the mouse that allows gamers to play from their armchairs within a 30-foot radius of their PC. This layout allows users to keep both hands closer together when using the mouse and keyboard. Optimized for gaming and media access, the lap board has full-size keys, extended spacebar, and an inverted T for both left- and right-handed players to navigate through games. The lap board will have U.S. and international compliance for distribution in Europe and Asia. Now, I will say, you know, as much as we make fun of the Phantom and think the Phantom sucks, the lap board isn't all that bad. I have actually used the lap board the 1 year that Phantom actually showed up at E3. I've actually seen the Phantom. I've played the Phantom. I've used this lap board. And the lap board is a very good possible solution for the people who want to play PC games from their couch, like me. The main reason I don't play PC games all that much is because I have a comfy chair, but I like slouching in my couch with a controller in my hand, and the lap board will allow me to have the keyboard and mouse in my lap while I'm slouching on the couch, and I can put my TV on my big screen TV out there that has a VGA input. So I'm not going to knock this lap board product. Now, what I am going to point out here is that they are looking for $2 million U.S. worth of investments, you know, of funding. Like, anybody's going to fund Infinium after everything that they've gone through, and they think they're going to get $2 million. I don't think that's going to happen. They're looking for $2 million worth of investors after all this, and that just blows my mind. So we may not see the lap board. They may not get enough money to show the lap board, but you know, Kevin Bacchus quit, so maybe he knows something that, you know, the rest of us don't about Infinium. Gita asks if I still have my Phantom t-shirt. Yes, I do, and it's actually funny. The Phantom t-shirt that they give you, when you play the Phantom, they gave you a t-shirt. A lot of, you know, E3 is all about getting as many t-shirts as you can. It says, "I believe" on it, saying that you believe that the Phantom exists. And I believe it exists. I don't believe it's any good. The Raven says that I would play PC games if I was able to play them on Xbox 360 with my controller and stuff. That's why I was excited about the 360. Then my dream went away. And Soul Brother Rule says, "I believe it will never come out." And the Raven says that, "I believe Duke Nukem Forever exists." Going over, we already talked a little bit about Sony in this broadcast right at the beginning, but to follow up on a story that we did before, the Philadelphia Inquirer is reporting that Sony has conceded that the graffiti ads that we talked about before, the taggers, they're not spontaneous art, but they are contrived marketing for the PSP. Sony did not get permission ahead of time for its graffiti ads, according to Philadelphia's Licenses and Inspections Department, which has strict billboard regulations. According to the Philadelphia Inquirer, quote, "Calls to Sony Computer Entertainment's headquarters in Foster City, California were not answered, but Sony spokeswoman Molly Smith has told other publications that the company paid for space and was not vandalizing property. She told the online website for Wired magazine that Sony was trying to appeal to urban nomads, people who are on the go constantly. Fred Wolfson likes the ads. He owns the commercial building near 8th Street on Girard Avenue with the Sony graffiti in Philadelphia. He said Sony had approached him about spray painting the images and was paying him an undisclosed sum to keep the ad for a month. Wolfson, who runs a truck rental business, calls the figures great. It's an interesting little wall mural," he said. "I don't have a problem with it." There's a little bit more to this that talks about New York and other places, but essentially, yeah, Sony did pay for those taggers to spray paint those images, but they did pay for the wall space, but they didn't go through the whole billboards. They didn't actually go to the city, say, "We're going to put an ad up." They just bought a wall and put up an ad, and this is kind of making them upset. So at least that mystery has been solved, that Sony really was trying to hit the urban market by having graffiti show PSPs in weird positions. Bam Bam says that here next, Sony will start programming in Ebonics. the last thing I was going to bring up is it's not a news story. This isn't anything new. It's just something that came up on our forums. It sparked a little bit of a debate, and probably people probably got the wrong impression from the other side of the debate. This is about a new PC game coming out, and it's based off of Left Behind. Now, if you've never heard of Left Behind, it's a Christian-themed series. Essentially, the plot of it is, you know, it takes the Bible's Book of Revelation seriously. The rapture occurs, millions of people disappears, they get sent up to heaven, you know, all the good Christians, and the people that are still on earth have to face the end of days and the 7 years of, you know, the Antichrist comes up and all that stuff. That's what the series is about. Well, there's a game coming out. Left Behind Games will release their first real-time strategy game, Eternal Forces, in spring 2006 for the PC. They intend to develop games so as to include the same types of elements that have made interactive games popular for years and yet offer a less graphic experience to the sexual themes and gratuitous violence currently found in many games. They plan to make all games visually and kinetically appealing. They anticipate that the games will be classified as both action and adventure and will receive either an E rating or a T rating. What I was saying is that, you know, this is a Christian-themed game, but there is actually a couple gamers that are very disgusted that this game is being made. I'm going to read some forum posts about this. Captain Mad said, quote, "My real thought-out complaint is that Christianity or any religion shouldn't be sold. I think joining the game industry is a very shameful move on their part. Some kids are going to think it's cool how these kids are on Earth after the apocalypse, but they don't really know what they're getting themselves into, unless they are either already aware of what the content is suggesting or they have smart, informative parents who can just help them make their own decisions. But hey, if this is directed towards Christian gamers, have a ball. It just seems kind of hypocritical from what I know about Christianity from my dad." Unquote. And then Captain N says, quote, "I'm sorry, but religion does need to stay out of our major media. It's never going to be equal for each and every religion, and I think it'd be pretty messed up for other religions to have or to be surrounded by other religions on the very few places they don't have to worry about it, TV, movies, games, etc. It's bad enough when you have people telling other people they're wrong in their belief systems on the streets. It'd be war if three or more religions were able to spread out to all forms of media and tell each other they were wrong and atheists are just stupid," unquote. And then Burr at the end says, quote, "I agree the general idea of it is in bad taste, but everyone makes money off scaring people. I don't think something like this will convert anyone who wasn't open enough to that sort of suggestion to begin with," unquote. So I see the parallels here that some of these people are saying, you know, when they're saying, you know, that this Left Behind game should not be made. And I actually posed three questions on our forums, and nobody wanted to answer these questions. And I'm going to pose the questions here, and if you have a comment on this, I'm more than willing to talk about this on future shows. So email it, Skype it in, or something like that. Here's the three questions that I posed to them. Question one is, what right do you or I have to say that a Christian can't have a Christian-themed video game? Question number two is, what right do you or I have to say that a mature person can't have a mature-themed video game, such as violent sex and all that? And then question number three is, why are your answers to questions number one and number two different when they are the exact same question? Those are my questions that went unanswered by people who don't think that the Left Behind game should be made. But if you have an opinion on this, me personally, I don't have a problem with this game existing. I probably won't buy it or play it, but nobody's forcing me to, you know, but it's going to be available in your local EB and GameStop. Just like Passion of the Christ and is available at your local Walmart and your local movie store, and Narnia is available in your local movie theater. So I don't personally see a problem with it. I'm going to look through chat and see if anybody's sitting here talking about it. And Tiger Claw just brought up the Chronicles of Narnia game is based on a movie, which is based on a book written by a Christian. But Doomplague says that a lot of books were written by Christians, but Narnia specifically is an allegory. DC Nate points out that mature and religious aren't exactly the same. Well, no, what I'm pointing out is that, you know, people are saying this one certain type of game shouldn't be sold, but, you know, it's a different type of, you know, why should we be allowed to say, no, this certain type of game should not be sold? And what makes certain types different? You know, I mean, I could be wrong. I could be wrong about this, but, you know, it's a conversation to have about it, and, just wanted to throw the topic out there, and if anybody wants to call in and or email, and we'll talk about it later, later this month, next week, next month, whatever, that's it. And since it was a slow news week, that's what we got to end with. DCNate says, it's probably about putting certain ideals in a bad light. Christianity doesn't want to be seen in certain ways by people. And a game about surviving the apocalypse kind of misses the point. Well, Left Behind is one of the more popular Christian fiction series out there. You know, that's kind of why, you know, this is a very, there's been movies, Kirk Cameron's been in the movies that have been made. They're very bad movies in terms of, like, budget and stuff. Kadosho says that he thinks that Castlevania touched on that a little. So anyway, that's all the time that we've got this week. Remember, All Games Interactive with Scott Rubin and Lawrence Young is live every weeknight from the Arena Interactive Lounge in Santa Monica, California at 7:30 p.m. Eastern, 4:30 p.m. Pacific on the same Shoutcast stream we do this show on. We'll be back again next week on Sunday night, hopefully with more news, probably from CES, 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific on this same stream. So catch us live and interact with us on the show directly. Or you can leave a voicemail with us on any topic, like the Left Behind topic, or just leave a bumper for use in our show on our Skype line, Bobby Blackwolf Show, or emailing me at blackwolf@allgames.com. Or you can also join our official forums at allgames.com to take part in our community and join in on all the discussions that are going on there. But you know what? We wouldn't be able to make the show live work without the chatters. DC Nate, Alt, Burr, Doomplague, Drunk Pandas, Gita, Hendrix, Ninjalt, Oshi, Rare, Reffy, Sageclaw, Stone Raider, The Matrix, THK, Bam Bam, Burning Paper Sun, Captain Roy, D5T, Digital Firefly, Dazelle, Fifth Dream, Gene Starwin, Hitman for Hire, Ichiban, Kadosho, Kazan, Nuxonic, Mecha, Shady45, Soul Brother Rule, Sub-Z, TDB, Tedekin, The Raven, Twinson, Tigerclaw, Visid, and Wilcon. And so, like I said, next week we'll be back on the Bobby Blackwolf Show. Go Dawgs, beat the Mountaineers in the Sugar Bowl. See you guys next week.
A winner is you. The views and opinions expressed on tonight's broadcast are not necessarily the views and opinions of All Games Productions. This file may be freely distributed provided the original content is unedited and proper attribution is retained. For more information about All Games programming, go to www.allgames.com.